You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca, Alberta's only regulated online gambling website. Use the promo code, and you get a new one every month, Greger50, and you'll get a free $50 play only at PlayAlberta.ca. Welcome back to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I appreciate it. So, I guess, let's start with of all the things that are put in, I guess, why don't you list them off, all of the ones that are going to be implemented this coming season?
Well, the two big ones, or a few big ones, are the changes to LTIR during the regular season, meaning you no longer get up to the player's cap hit if they're injured. If they're expected to come back at some point, you only get up to the league average, which is going to be just under $4 million this year. So let's say the Panthers with Matthew Tkachuk, they don't get his full cap hit as relief while he's on LTIR. They just get $3.8 million. Okay. Whereas a player like Carey Price, though, who's definitely out all season, they would get still his full cap hit as relief. So that LTIR change is going into effect. Okay. The playoff cap, which is a new thing, is actually going to affect this year as well. Yep. And we can get into how that works. No more deferred compensation deals starting October 7th. So you can still sign one, I guess, technically today, but by the first day of the season, no more deferred compensation deals. The restriction on double retention goes into effect this season. So there has to be 75 league days between a first retention on a player and a second retention. So that means if a player is going to get retained twice by the trade deadline, the first trade has to be done like by Christmas, because you'd still need 75 days by the deadline. So I think we'll see, I'd be surprised if we see another double retention again, in the NHL. The last couple that are going into place now, the restriction on paper loans. So a player has to actually play a game in the AHL before they can come back up. And a couple small, one smaller one, or how many recalls allowed after the trade deadline. They can do one more. And then the one that is not for sure, but is something they're trying to do, is allowing a team to have a 19-year-old in the AHL. That requires the CHL to agree to that, and that hasn't happened yet. But in the memo that went out today, they basically, the league and the PA agreed to try to push the CHL to allow that this season. And they're supposed to be negotiating that next week. So that one is up in the air, but they're going to try and make that change. So that's a lot that is going to be going to affect this season, when up until this morning, most people would have expected all of these to start next season.
Now, the one thing you mentioned, that the player, if sent to the minors, has to play a game, except if it's the paper transaction on the deadline. Is that right?
There's still some uncertainty about that. There's some people with teams that think that's the case. So you're talking about how on the deadline, players get sent to the minors on paper because that would allow them to play in the playoffs in the AHL. Yeah. You have to be on the roster. The way that it's written in the MOU, it seems like that would not be allowed, because they would have to actually play one game before they come up. But there's still some people thinking that maybe that is an exemption, and there needs to be some more clarity. We should point out too, like, we still don't have a full CBA. We just have a memo of understanding, right? So it's just like the key deal points, and there's still some more language to have an official CBA to get written. So that's something that maybe the full CBA is written by the deadline, or maybe they just clarify that. But as of the way it's technically written, it seems like no, on deadline day, they would actually have to play a game in the minors before they could come up.
Yeah, which would seem kind of odd, because I know the reason for that rule and why you do it, but I guess
there's a few odd things, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. The LTIR, in your why do you think they were pushing for that? Is it just a way to limit a team getting massive savings if a player's coming back, for 4 months or something like that? Is that the purpose of this? Were they questioning the validity of injuries?
Yeah, I think you kind of look at them together, the reduction in the benefit of the LTIR in the season, and then adding a playoff cap. I think those are both going after the teams that had players out during the season, and then they came back to start the playoffs. And while those were always technically allowed, there's something that didn't feel right about it, or didn't smell right. You know, yeah. And then, it didn't help with Kucherov with his t-shirt and really, like, kind of making a big deal out of it. And we've seen that. We saw Florida this last year, being able to do that as well. So I think both of those are trying to get at that. In my opinion, though, they picked like two solutions to solve one problem. Probably could have done with one or the other.
Yes.
Like, if you made this LTIR in-season change and you only get a benefit up to $3.8 million, I think that would reduce how much like a team gets a benefit in the playoffs by all of a sudden a guy comes off LTIR. Okay, so maybe they could be a couple million over the cap because the guy came back right for the playoffs, but it wouldn't feel as dramatic as it has felt. But now you've kind of done both. You've done this in-season change and you've added a playoff cap, and then we can get into the rules of the playoff cap, and you all of this, and you add in the double retention. It's going to mean a lot less transactions. I think a lot less trades during the season, which is disappointing because that's what people are interested in.
100%. And so let's go to this, like the playoff salary cap now, and mm-hmm. and how that's going to limit movement for teams.
So the playoff salary cap is interesting. As your listeners know, like during the season, a player only counts against the team for the number of days they're on the NHL roster. So that's why teams under the cap, we call it accruing cap space during the season. It's technically not accruing space. It's just that by the deadline, a team only has to fit about 20% of a player's cap hit. So the space that they have is worth more at the deadline, right?
Right.
But the playoff cap doesn't factor that in at all. It factors in the player's full cap hit. So if there's a $10 million player and a team acquired him at the deadline, that means he's only going to take just over $2 million of cap hit during the regular season, but they need to have $10 million. He'll take up $10 million of space in the playoffs. So what that means is while a team can still benefit from kind of saving space and then using that space later in the season, that doesn't really help them in the playoffs. And so if it's a team that is definitely in the playoffs and that's why they would want to make a move, they really, even they could fit a player in at the deadline because of their regular season cap space. When they model out what their playoff roster looks like, they might not have room for all the guys. And so that just takes a team off the board that might want to make that splash. So there's some other intricacies to the playoff cap, but the big one is it's just the 20 players that are dressed. So there's some benefit. You don't have to worry about injured players or scratches. But again, it's the player's full cap hit, regardless of when they were acquired during the season, that counts on the playoff cap.
Yeah, that's the key point, I think, for our audience. So, you know, when you acquire a player mid-season and there's only, you know, 50 days left out of 180, well, that's the percentage of his cap that you have to have then. However, in the playoffs, now this guy, like, for instance, Seth Jones last year, he wouldn't have counted for, he would count for the full nine. Right. And that's
exactly
right.
So I should point out retention though is factored into the playoff cap.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So let's just take, again, a $10 million player and a team retains $5 million of it.
Okay.
And then they acquire him halfway through the season. So in the regular season, now he's only going to count for $2.5 million, right? Because they retain $5 million. And he's only going to be on the roster for half the season. So that's down to basically $2.5 million would get charged to that team's cap. But in the playoffs, the retention is still in effect. So he's still a $5 million player. But you lose the benefit that you got him halfway through the season. It counts as if you acquired him at the start of the season. So he would carry that full $5 million that's left after the retention. So there's still some benefit to get a team to retain, but you don't get the benefit from acquiring a player later in the season.
Yeah, like doesn't it seem though that it's almost punishing a team that has cap space during the season?
Well, that's the effect. I would say, in fairness, I don't think they're trying to punish them. But similar to other things that we've seen in the NHL, I think they had a problem. They threw some solutions at it, and now there's going to be unintended consequences coming out of it. And I completely agree. I think one of the consequences is there's less of a benefit for teams that accrue cap space during the season because now they get less of a benefit in the playoffs for that player.
Yes. Hart Levine joins us from Puckpedia. And I agree. Like, to me, I understand what they're trying to do here. They're concerned about the teams having an unfair advantage in the playoffs. But it's almost like you mentioned earlier, Hart, how they had a problem, but now they've tried to fix it twice, and it's almost like you're punishing them twice because of it.
I agree, yeah. Like, so as we talk, like, let's say they just had the in-season LTIR rule, and so yeah, Matthew Tkachuk's on LTIR, but you only get a benefit of the $3.8 million instead of his full $9.5 million. Okay, so again, I don't think fans would be up in arms if a team was like $1 million or $2 million over the cap in the playoffs. It's being like $5, $6, $8 million over the cap that people have a hard time with. So
yes.
I think that would have been enough. And maybe, you know, like a playoff cap, again, maybe there's some benefit to it, but it also seems like the rules weren't thought all the way through. We should say, like, they did put in there that after a couple of years, they could rework this playoff cap calculation. So, I mean, maybe they even rework it like tomorrow for all we know, right? So right. It could still change.
Okay.
But it seems like, okay, we need a playoff cap because we don't like how this feels. Let's just make up some rules and not really like think through the consequences of it.
Now, the fact that I know Carolina did it twice with deferred money, but you'd have to do so much. Like, is there, like, for Connor McDavid, and because he's a player that doesn't have a contract yet, well, he does for this year, but he could sign an extension. Mm-hmm. Like, is there a real benefit of deferred money for the Oilers? Like, because I look at the Seth Jarvis and also Slavin, like, the cap hit was like 400 grand that it, like, not really significant enough to make a difference. If McDavid's at 17 million, for argument's sake, and you defer, like, how much could it be to where it's an actual benefit?
I agree. I don't think it provides that much benefit. I think Tavares is one with Toronto where there was more of a benefit. But the way that the calculation works is basically like however much benefit you get, that's what's going to like reduce the cap hit. But then the player's thinking, well, if I'm going to defer this money, like I need to get paid extra for that. 100%. So you kind of get to like the same point.
Yes.
And so like with Tavares though, I think you could look at it and say like, look, he is taking less like money or like less of a benefit because he's pushed the money out. And you look at like what that money's worth today, he gave like a real discount. But unless the player is going to give a real, real discount, I think it's a lot of work and energy that doesn't provide a lot of value. And the thing is with the calculation for how the deferral is calculated, like how the deferred cap hit is calculated, the key input is the interest rate. And that's kind of like a market interest rate. And, you know, as we know, interest rates have been high, relatively high over the last number of years. At some point, we would expect interest rates to go down and then the benefit gets even smaller. And I think that's why for many years, we never saw any of these deals because when interest rates are much lower, the impact would be even less. So I think for a lot of reasons, like it wasn't much of a benefit. But I do think that, you know, there's teams that do it and they want to kind of show how smart they are and they're exposing a part of the CBA that people aren't using. But it is like a lot of work to not accomplish a lot, in my opinion. I agree.
Hart, great stuff, man. Really appreciate it. Of course, everybody can always see it and at Puckpedia. Read it all there. I know everybody's there when they check out all the salaries, but if you want to learn more about the CBA changes, Hart has an article right up there to clarify it even more. As always, man, we appreciate it. Have an awesome day. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.